Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020. I'm now here with one of my favourite guests every year, a good friend of mine, Martin Lichtmess. And he is an Austrian writer, commentator, intellectual. Oh, and yes, I like to joke that he is known as the intellectual Überstern of Austria.
Well, that's what you say. I prepared it just to give you a chance to drop this line about me.
I was actually going to be quite serious about it, but
I love these are very much every Christmas I need these, you know, on the Christmas tree, and I also need them on New Year's Eve. They're essential, you know. They're so silly, but I mean, we had this in my childhood, and these are they have stayed completely the same, and they're awesome.
One of my earliest memories is of those. We call them sparklers here, and we have them at Guy Fawkes Night, Bonfire Night, the 5th of November. And one of my earliest memories is of those, like when I was about 3. So, yeah, it's funny to see that.
Well, it will be finished in a second, so don't worry.
All right, just as long as you
just to have a dramatic entrance, you know, a dramatic Christmassy entrance as well.
So, all right. Thank
Vienna
you.
Vienna calling. Oh. Do your viewers know that you got into Falco this year?
You know, that's been a thing this year that you and I have shared a lot of music, and one of the things that you've introduced me to is Falco. But I have talked about it on Telegram here and there. But hold on a second, I'm just going to post this. Yes, Falco is fantastic. I never knew that he was so talented. So there we go. I've posted it now. But yeah, that song and Ganz Wien. And
yes, that's my favorite. That's his best. His first and his best, I say.
And,
yeah.
And Der Kommissar. That's my other friend. But there are others. There was another one where it's like a love song. I've forgotten the title now, but it is...
Genie?
Yes, it might have been that.
Quit living in dreams.
Yes, that one. Yeah, that one is fantastic. And he was very versatile. So,
but you know that song that caused quite a scandal back then in 1985 or 86 because there was a video clip and it showed that it was all about some psychopath who is stalking a girl and maybe abducting her, maybe killing her. In the end, he's shown in a... in an insane asylum with a straitjacket on and so.
Oh, dear.
And it was very controversial back then, that song. It seems also silly nowadays.
It's funny because, I mean, the Human League's big song is kind of similar. Don't You Want Me? It's about a very controlling lover. There is a thing in the darkness about the love song.
Baby.
Yes.
Oh, really?
You were working in a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met you, something, and I could put you back down there. So I've made you into this star, but I could make you nothing again. So there's a sort of threat. And it
there's a creepy undertone in it. So I never realized it because I hate this song. This is when Human League started to become very bad, and all the early stuff is really good. But,
yes. You know. I was going to say there are good. It's not their best hit song at all. But it is the one that made them massively rich.
Annoying, but I didn't know it had this subtext. And Falco, you know, he did a lot of crap as well, and you know he had all the usual rock star problems with drugs. And actually, one of his girlfriends, she cocked him. He had a girl daughter, and then it came out that he wasn't the real father. But nonetheless, he loved this girl very much, and she, you know, said he's my father. And so, and when he died in a car crash, it was sort of a national tragedy. But his peak popularity had been way back, you know, 10 years before.
Mid-80s.
So he was in decline and all this. And but you know, now I have a chance to tell you a stupid joke that. When I was a child, was very popular among school kids, and you can only tell it visually, so I could not write it to you. So, and it goes a bit like this, and you have to know about Falco. I mean, you know him, his this persona, this sort of, well, how should I say, this arrogant, snobbish, at the same time, there's something high class about him, but at the same time, something low class. This is the weird thing. He combined it. He was like a pimp who would talk like a high class guy. And this was sort of his persona, the arrogance, you know. And allegedly, he was a very nice guy personally, but this was, you know, the image he had. And the joke is like this. So Falco, he's in the desert. And he says, oh, please, dear God, I need some water. I need water. And God says, no, Falco, you have been an arrogant bastard. You won't get any water. And Falco moves on. He says, please, please, just a bit of water, a bit of water. And God says, no, Falco, you will suffer because you have been an arrogant bastard. And then Falco is on his feet and he says, oh, please, God, just one drop, just one drop. And God says, well, all right. And Falco goes,
that's to do with his body language in his videos.
But absolutely. Yeah. Like his, he would fix his hair, you know, like.
But I have to say, about him being a nice guy, that really comes across in his live performances. If you see him in concert, mm-hmm. he just seems like a really nice guy, like fun to be around and all that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we've talked about Falco for 6.5 minutes already when we should be talking about you. Since you are the star of the show,
right.
let's well, since we're on the topic of music, let's also because another thing that you and I have shared this year is the joy of Peel sessions. Now, I discovered I've known about Peel sessions for a long, long time, and so have you, or have you actually, or did I?
I have a few vinyls actually. Right. I have Birthday Party. I have Joy Division. And I knew about it, but I wasn't much into it. And then I realized it's very nice to play when I'm cooking. So
it's another thing
I discovered last year. So I like to cook, and then I just played all the Peel sessions of bands I like. You know, like there were, for example, 4 different Peel sessions of Susie and the Banshees. And, one I got really excited about was X-Mile Deutschland.
That's one. That, yes, exactly.
The German goth band, which I adore. And they have, and Peel sessions, it's great.
It's great. I mean, it's this thing where it's the John Peel show. He died in 2005 or 6. And he used to do these things where he would get a band to perform 4 of their songs in one day, and it would all be mixed and recorded. Everything would be done in one day, and then that would be broadcast, and it would be a sort of rough and ready studio version. It'd be somewhere between a live version and a studio version, and it would be quite unique. And I'd known about these all my life, but I then discovered that there's a channel on YouTube that just has these as like endless videos, like where, and it makes for a really lovely, like 16 to 18 to 20 minutes long video with 4 songs on it, and it's a great sample. It's a great. It's just long enough. It's like an EP. It's just the right length, you know. It's
There are some where his in between lines are cut out, and some were included. And I like those when you can hear him talk, because you get to experience how it would have been like if you had listened on the radio. It's very fun. Like he said, and now here's a rather underrated band from Manchester, the Joy Division. And this is like early days of Joy Division. Or another one, like The Cure, and then it's playing Killing Arab. The song is called Killing an Arab in Self-Defense, of course.
He had a very dry sense of humor. And he was very famous for that. But this thing that he has left us with is this catalogue of music, that the recordings that would not exist without him. And I think it's fantastic. I mean, I think it was over 1,000 bands who recorded Peel sessions. It was some huge number. So, and I think they all are in existence, but they're not all on YouTube yet, but I think they will be. And it's a really nice wee thing. And I discovered that this year, and you and I were sharing loads of those sessions.
So yeah, it was nice. No, but, this was a good tip of yours, and I enjoyed especially when I listened to all the Susie and the Banshees or Joy Division, where the recordings, the usual recordings, I know them very well. I have listened to them lots of times, and now you hear them, and they are slightly different or sometimes strikingly different. And I mean, I'm not such a big fan of live recordings, but the thing is, as you said, it's not really like a live recording. It's like some hybrids between a live recording in the studio, and this was very intriguing.
Quite unique. We could talk about music for ages, and we have talked about music for ages privately. But let's get on to the topic that everyone wants to hear about, which is your Viennese perspective on the COVID thing this year. And now, obviously, we can talk about other things later, but this is something that I really want to hear what you think, because obviously every country has had its own experience of this, and they've had different laws, different lockdowns, and different cultural treatments of it as well. So what is the situation in Austria and Vienna? And how did it develop from the start?
Well, yeah, I suggested we talk about it, because this is the thing that is most on my mind now every day. It's like waking up every day in a nightmare, and you think, can this be true? And I have been following it, well, when it started in spring. A curious thing happening. There was a certain switch in positions between the mainstream media and the alternative media. At the beginning, I remember Martin Sellner was making videos and saying, oh, there's a dangerous disease coming, and you see how open borders are a problem. You know, he was framing it like this. And
which is still true.
Of course, it's true. But at the same time, the mainstream media were mocking also him. I remember there was a program on German state TV, and they were mocking and said, oh, yeah, there's this, it's just like a flu, and there are these fear makers again, you know, the right-wing fear makers, they always need some danger, you know, to cough up, to be paranoid, to worry about. And it was weird, you know, and some these videos are recorded, and they get posted on right-wing Twitter all the time. It's just as a reminder how it was in the beginning, you know. And then there was a switch of position at one point. I mean, I can't really tell when, but it was in March, April or so. And then all of a sudden it became a big danger. The government would order immediately a lockdown in Austria. And this is when the alternative media became suspicious about it. And me too, you know. So in the beginning, I was not sure what would happen here. And I tell you, the moment when I became suspicious is that when I bought a newspaper. It's like a daily, how you call it, like more yellow press paper. But Kronen Zeitung, it's called. And curiously, ironically, it's the Crown newspaper, because the Crown used to be the coin where you paid for 100 years ago. So this is paper has been existing for a long time, and it is the most widely read paper in the world in relation to the population of. So I mean, we have like 8 million people in Austria, or so, and 3 million read this paper. So it has a large distribution, the largest in the world in relative terms. And so this paper was doing a complete round of government propaganda. Like, you could see the government is doing the right thing. Trust the government. You had all these ads like, we have to take care of each other. You have to do this now. Okay, wear mask, distancing. There were these polls that said, do you trust the chancellor? 99% say, yes, of course, we trust the chancellor. And so I like this. So, okay, and then there was this absurd thing. That you had police cars driving slowly through the streets and checking if everybody would stay home. And at the same time, they had these speakers on their cars, and they would play a very popular Austrian song, which is called I'm from Austria by Reinhard Fendrich. He's an Austrian pop singer. And this song is like the popular patriotic hymn for Austrians. And they would play this patriotic song, which is very, very popular in Austria. And all of a sudden, there was this patriotism in the papers, like, we stick together in this crisis. And I said, wow, interesting. Now patriotism is really cool again, you see? And they had...
Wir schaffen das.
Huh? Wir schaffen das.
Wir schaffen das.
It was Wir schaffen das. And you had then these covers of papers with all these celebrities, you know, usually just... sportsmen, as football players, or singers, or pop stars, and so that kind of crap. And they were all saying, yeah, we stick together. So I was become, it had a strange feeling to me. I mean, I've become very sensitive.
That point that you made, I sorry to interrupt you, the point about suddenly patriotism is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You got a version of that in Britain as well, but suddenly we all care about the NHS, our NHS, and we've got to look after our NHS by not putting too much of a burden on it, and so you've got to stay safe. And that was very much linked in with, I mean, it's like that's the only type of patriotism you're allowed. But anyway, speak about the Austrian version of that.
I mean, to go back, give a bit more context, like Chancellor Kurz, it's funny, he has the same name like the guy in Joseph Conrad, Heart of Darkness, you know, Commander Kurz. Okay, so, I mean, he's very young, he's in his 30s. He's like from the center-right, so-called conservative, conservative party. And he basically got all his votes by adopting a Freedom Party program, but making it a bit more, you know, acceptable for bourgeois people, or for people who don't want to get too much into the mud of populism and so. But he sort of modified it, and he got all these votes, you know, by sentiment, you know, we have to kind of slow down immigration, we have to be harder on immigrants who behave badly and all the kind of thing. So this is the way he got in power. And in the beginning, the vice chancellor was Strache from the Freedom Party. And there was this story. He got kicked because some videos...
Was that the FPÖ?
Huh? FPÖ. Freedom. So, and then some old videotape emerged where he's, you know, talking with some... okay, it's a long story. I cut it here. But he got kicked out of the government. There was a new election. And Kurz, he won big, you know, he won bigly. And now the coalition party was the Green Party. So the vice chancellor was this time a Green Party guy. And Green Party, basically, they just shut up. They do nothing. They have now their part in the government. And they're not opposing anything Kurz and his party is doing. You know, they are the center-right, conservative, conservative mafia that basically dominate Austria by now, you know, and they are a mafia. And I know, I mean, if you have been a dissident like me, they have been most after banning identitarians and all that, you know, even more than the leftists, you know, they were really after it, and they are trying to do it again. You know, that we had some an Islamist attack 2 months ago in Vienna.
Yeah, I remember you and I were talking throughout it.
Yeah, yeah. It was quite scary. No, it was a horrible thing. And now the genius measures they're taking is, hey, we are making Islamist symbols illegal and identitarian symbols illegal in one package. You know, this is the anti-terror package, and it's absurd because identitarians never did something illegal. They were cleared of all accusations at court. They'd never participated in any terrorist thing. And, you know, they were against Islamism in the first place. You know, this was one of the major things. So this is absurd. So this is a government that is trying to ban identitarians and trying to ban me, or I don't know. So obviously I don't like this government in the first place, you know. Now what's happening is that all of a sudden this government is becoming very, very patriotic and very paternalistic. And so so this is when I started getting suspicious, you know. And there were some strange things that in retrospect just are stupid, you know. They would close down parks, they would close down playgrounds for children, you know. They did not do it now, they did not do it later, because it makes no sense. It's absolutely no danger of any infection if you're in the open air, you know. I remember that people ignored it anyway. I mean, children were not on the playgrounds, they were playing on the grass nearby, you know, so it was just the same. And so this was the first phase. When the first lockdown entered, in summer we had the restrictions loosened. So you had to wear these fucking masks in several places, but overall you did not notice much was going on. So the media would keep up the mood, the atmosphere, and you would have the feeling, it's not over yet. But, you know, I mean, in the end, of course, even with the flu, the infection numbers, they drop when summer and spring comes, and they rise when winter comes. So this was a completely natural thing happening. So there was a time in summer when we,
I mean, in Britain, they did loosen, they ended the lockdown, but that was when they introduced the masks, that you had to wear masks, sorry, in shops, in supermarkets and everything. Throughout the spring and early summer, you didn't have to wear the masks. That came in afterwards, which is completely ridiculous to me. I don't understand why they would do that, except that they wanted to maintain this culture, of this COVID culture.
Sure. Funny thing is, with us, it was completely the opposite. So in spring and April, there were masks everywhere. And in summer, you were wearing masks only in public transport, but not in shops anymore, not in supermarkets, basically almost nowhere, you know. So it was limited. But the feeling that something is going on was still held up by these masks. So, you know, it felt like a show. And back then, of course, all these so-called conspiracy theories were already up, like what the hell is going on with this great reset thing, and how dangerous is this virus really, and so. And I mean, one thing that also happened is that in April and March, there were a few names emerging on the internet of German doctors, and I had never heard of them. I'm not interested in these kind of things, but all of a sudden their names were there. And these were doctors with a high reputation, you know. They had high positions in the German health system, and they were contradicting the measures. They were saying, no, this is a false alarm, something's wrong. And immediately the media would tell you, oh, these are the crazy guys. These are the stupid guys, you know. They were framed as crazy guys, you know. Before that, they had a complete high reputation. There was this one guy, he's from Thailand, actually, but he lived and worked in Germany, Sukharit Bhakti. He was also in American media. He was on Fox News, for example. And he was the most impressive and most decidedly... he was very rational in his argumentation. He convinced me, you know. I heard him speak and I said, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. And he would basically say that, you know, the masks are completely useless. They don't work. He would say that this disease is maybe a bit more than the influenza, but not beyond that, you know. It's completely out of proportion the way it's being portrayed. And many other things. And by now he's come out against the impending vaccinations. He severely warns against it. He says, he gave really warnings that do not take this ever, right? So these are the guys that all of a sudden became known to a larger audience.
And what was, what was his name, just to, so that people can look it up?
Sukharit Bhakti. I mean, I can send it to you on Telegram, this name. But he has done some interviews in English, and his English is perfect. So wait, I send you this name so people can look it up. Okay. So he's the guy who impressed me the most. It's funny. He was on Fox News, and there was Megyn Kelly, and she was asking some long-winded question like, now, Dr. Bhakti, do you think the mass vaccination will blah 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 blah? Is there science? And he says, no science. Zero science. And that's all he says. It's so fun. I mean, he's more eloquent than that. But in this interview, he just answers like, so, no, both. And she goes, right, and poses another long-winding question. And he says, no science, zero science. It's very funny. Okay, so...
That's amazing.
Yeah. So this is how it started. You had the media would decide who were the bad guys and who were the good guys in this discussion. But the thing is that there was no discussion whatsoever. And, of course, I recognized this pattern, you know, with other things like, you know, immigrant crisis. And so the way when the line is set by the government, the politics are set, the story is set, the narrative is set. And when this happens, any dissenter will be, you know, deplatformed, and it happened to Dr. Bhakti. He got deplatformed from YouTube, There was another Dr. Vodak. He got also the platform. They got all the platform from YouTube. Now, and these were people with a high reputation. And all of a sudden, the media would portray them as cranks and as crazy guys. And they had this, Germany has a Dr. Fauci as well. And his name is Drosten. And he just looks weird. I mean, probably I look weirder than him, but I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, you're not claiming to be a man of science.
No, not at all. But so all these things is very fishy. So, but to proceed, I mean, when autumn came, October came, we had these reports. It said the numbers are rising. Yeah, the numbers. So everybody was talking about these fucking numbers, right? And what they were doing is the same thing they did in other countries. They were using these tests, these PCR tests, and they would say, wow, so many people infected. I mean, I won't go into that because I'm not a scientist. Probably you have discussed it with other people on your channel. But the thing is, this test detects the virus or detects parts of the virus or particles of the virus. But this doesn't mean this person is sick. This is the point, you know. So they only had collected, they said, they had this difference between cases and active cases. So active cases are people that are actually sick. Yeah. And the media would not really communicate this difference, right? And they would also not communicate that when they said, so many people died because of corona, did they die really because of it or just because the virus was detected with the test? No, most of the times they had multiple other diseases. I mean, you could have a car accident and they would detect corona and say, you are one of the corona.
Yes, of course. And also, I've heard very strange things about the PCR test. And apparently the inventor of it has even said it shouldn't be used as a test for the coronavirus.
He has said it's only for laboratory use. And it's not used for a mass diagnosis. You know? It's useless for this. He completely rejected that. And curiously, he died just 2 or 3 months before the virus broke out. So you can have a conspiracy theory on that, maybe. I mean, you could imagine what he would say if he was alive. He's controversial because he also questioned the HIV virus. He denied that the HIV virus causes AIDS. So
I see.
Yeah. But I got into this a bit, and it's actually very interesting because it makes you think about how are these so-called epidemics really created in the public mind. And there was another doctor, Dr. Vodak, I mentioned him. He was also a doctor of high reputation in Germany. And he was also one of those who were portrayed as complete freaks and losers after the media settled on the new narrative. And he did an interesting thing. 10 years ago, there was the swine flu epidemic. And if you dig up the media from that time, I don't know what it's like in Britain, but if you dig up the media in Germany, you have the whole same thing. You have the same headlines, you have the same hysteria, you have the same, so many people will die, it will be horrible and so. And what happened is the German government bought a vaccine for millions and millions of euros, and it didn't use it. You know, they bought it, and then at one point it was over. There was no swine flu anymore. They did not use it at all. So the industry, this pharma industry made a shitload of money on that, you know, and it was all done with political pressure and media pressure. And Vodak, he was one of those that exposed it back then, and he was acknowledged for it. And the weird thing is that what's happening now, as this is what he says, is a rerun, but on a much larger scale, you know, on a global scale. And this time they go for real, you know. The thing that scares me at the moment the most is that the government is really pushing you to take these vaccines. So this is the story we have now. I mean, people are now in Austria, they are by now, they are just traumatized. You know? They are traumatized by this kind of propaganda. It scares you.
And it's all, I mean, the big thing for me is that the survival, the virus survival rate is 99.6%.
Yeah, nobody's denying this. Like, you can look it up. Nobody's denying this. This is amazing. You can look it up.
So that in itself means this is not something we need to really worry about. I mean, it's not a big deal.
I mean, there are temporary problems. Like, you have this right now in old people's homes. I have a friend who is working in an old people's home. He's politically much on our side, right? So I trust his judgment. And he says, he can see there are more deaths by now than usual. And he says he has not seen anything like it before in that scale. Yeah? And he also says that the nurses and so, they get infected quite easily and they feel bad. They don't die, you know, old people die. But at the same time, he says, okay, something is going on that is unusual. I would not downplay it completely. But
it's not the seasonal flu. It's a bit worse than the seasonal flu.
I think so. Yeah. I have the impression as well. But if you get the official statistics in Austria, who's dying, then it's people, you know, on the average 80 years old. And this is the life expectancy in Austria. So, yeah. I mean, the thing is, you just, usually you die of something. One day you just fucking die. You get cancer, you get flu, because, and then your organism is not strong enough to.
Exactly. I mean, most people expect to live to about 80 these days. As I said, life expectancy is normal. So to die, you know, if you die at 80 or 82 of coronavirus, are you really going to say, oh shit, how did the authorities let this happen to me? I mean, loads of people die in their early 80s. It's just normal. it's not some freak occurrence.
Yeah. So, I mean, the hotspot of people actually dying is in these old people's homes. I mean, Europa especially is an overaged society. I mean, this is part of the demographic problem. Like, when immigrants have more children at the same time, my friend told me something quite irritating, and I can't fit this piece of the puzzle anywhere. And I have heard it before elsewhere. He says there are strange cases of COVID where young people get it and they have no prior sickness and they struggle to death or even die. And he told me that he would personally know some cases, you know. I mean, I've written to him to be more specific, to tell me, okay, tell me how many do you know what happened? It's not a gotcha question for him. It's just I want to know. Yeah. So, and I read it sometimes in the papers. There's something strange, you know, something irregular, which does neither fit one narrative or the other. But the thing is, I mean, the way I've become suspicious about the media reporting, you know, I just don't trust anything anymore. They serve us to scare us.
I mean, look,
I just
people
don't
die.
Trust it anymore.
And people die, right? And people die in their 20s, in their teens. I knew a girl who died at the age of 16 of a syndrome, Lemaire syndrome, it's called. I don't know anything about it. But she was 16, complete in perfect health, and then she got this thing and just died. It happens. That's a tragedy, but it does happen. It's unusual, especially nowadays, because of medical science and all that, but it still happens. And so if some people die from coronavirus when they're, you know, when they're young, it doesn't mean that we should be doing all of this, basically.
No.
This is insane. I mean, what we're doing, we're destroying the economy for generations.
Even if somebody could prove to me that there are a few cases like this, they are not enough to justify what's happening. Certainly not. Yeah? But what fascinates me totally is the way I see propaganda working. And, I mean, being a dissident, I've become very sensitive to this. So I don't know much about medicine, but I know about propaganda and how it works, about media framings and about media reports and the way they select things to care about. And this year has been a particular year of, you know, insane media narratives. I mean, I give you two more examples. The whole Black Lives Matter thing was just made by the media, you know, And like with Corona, you can look up official statistics of, you know, interracial crime and all this, and violence, police violence or violence against police. You can look it up. It's official statistics. And you can realize they don't fit the Black Lives Matter narrative. But the narrative rules, no matter what. I mean, the narrative is so strong that you can even allow, you know, criticism there and then, you know. You can have in the same paper, you can have the illusion that, oh, yes, it is being discussed and so. But the narrative is set, you know. And also the Trump election, which is also an insane thing, because if you look it up, obviously there has been going something fishy on with the voter fraud.
Oh, that's another thing altogether. Yeah. And yeah, we could certainly, we've got to be very careful what you say about that on YouTube. And we are broadcasting on YouTube.
And it's just...
It's fishy.
But the thing is, I mean, you have this clear thing. If the media doesn't make it a story, it's not a story. The same with the Hunter Biden laptop. You know, prior to the election, they would say, oh, no, it's Russian disinformation. And now you read, oh, investigations going on against Hunter and all that. So I find it fascinating to watch how the media creates reality. It creates the story people live in. And if media choose to pick one kind of, there are horrible things happening every day, diseases and so. But if you pick only stories about tragedies, human tragedies related to Corona or allegedly related to Corona, you create the impression there's nothing else going on this planet than this, right? And if you don't report on the voter fraud thing and so, you make the appearance, oh, there's nothing there, nothing to see. Trump is just crazy. He cannot lose and so. And so this power of media narrative is so striking. I have never seen anything like it. And this, I think it's mind-blowing. And when I pick up a paper in Austria, so there are these papers for free when you go into the subway. And by now, each story, even the tiniest little story, is all related to coronavirus. And they're making such a big fuss, for example, this new alleged mutation that happened in Britain. Right? I mean, if you look what actual scientists say, they say, no, these mutations happen all the time and it's not dangerous and not more dangerous than the one we already have. But the way the Austrian media frames it is like, wow, even more dangerous. Now it's coming from Britain. It's horrible. You know, these headlines, they scream at you. It's horrible. And I mean, I'm already detached from this. You know, I'm detached from mainstream media. I'm already, you know, secessions. But most people are not. Most people rely on this. This is the world they live in. This is the world they trust. And I wonder what's going on in their heads. And I realize also one thing, that how aggressive people are becoming. And now I have to tell you a story, which is probably putting me in a bad light, but I try to put it a bit humorously. You know, so like a few days ago, there was announced that the government would introduce a vaccine passport, right? And it would be obligatory for everyone in Austria. You cannot refuse it. You have to have it. If you're in the health system, you have to have it. And there was also suggested that this passport could help you get some privileges while there's a lockdown. I mean, you had this discussion also in Britain, I think, you know.
Yes. Your life can go back to normal if you just have this passport.
Right. And if you get the vaccine, you can get to normal. The others have to wait. You can take flights. You can go to restaurants. You can go to swimming baths and all that. So you are creating a sort of system where you are a second-class citizen if you have no vaccine, huh? Or if you have no tests. They haven't done it yet, but they are talking about it all the time. And they're also talking about how people who will not take the vaccine, they should suffer social pressure and consequences. And some people think it's a very good idea. Almost every day you had some journalist or had some big shot guy talking about this now in German language media. It's weird, you know. And I read this, that the government has introduced this passport. I got so angry. I said, I was like Greta Thunberg said, how dare you? I got really, really angry. And you feel helpless to it, you know, because there's nothing you can do about it. So it was 11 at night. And I said, okay, I need some fresh air. So I go out on the street and I I talked to a friend on the phone, you know, said, did you just read what the government is announcing? And I walk down the street, and the street is completely empty. Like 1 kilometer in this direction, nobody. Nobody does, nobody. And it's foggy, and it's dark. And what do I see? A guy approaching me wearing a fucking mask. You see? In the middle of the night, in open space, where it's useless. I mean, it's official, it's useless. You don't need to mask. And nobody sees him. He can't even virtue signal with his fucking mask because nobody fucking sees him, you know? And this is the first thing I see. And I see these dumb eyes looking behind it. And you know, my first impulse was just to smash, break his nose. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but I was so angry seeing at this fucking face of a fucking dumb idiot, because this is why it works. Because there are idiots like this who let themselves get brainwashed, and this is how the government exerts power. And so I was talking to my friend on the phone, and then I see this guy pass me, I say, oh, look, here's another one of these fucking idiots, you know. And this guy looks at me and said, yeah, you fucking idiot. He's here on the street in the middle of the night. Nobody's there. He's wearing a mask, you know. Of course, this guy was very angry at me. And he says, well, what are you talking about, you asshole, you wanker? And he threatens to beat me. And I just walk on and say, yeah, the conversation is over. Bye-bye. And I pass by. And then I calmed down and said, okay, that was not okay of me to do that. You know, it's just some innocent, stupid, brainwashed normie I just encountered. Yeah? And but I realized how much aggression I had against these people inside me. You know, I realized at this point, and my whole hate for the government and for Commander Kurtz was just spilling out, you know, and to this poor guy, he was just my projection for all the hate I had for this situation. And the thing is, it happens vice versa, because if people catch you not wearing a mask, they can get very aggressive as well. You know, they really hate you. They tell you they want you to die slowly. They think you are to blame because the lockdown is still going on. They think you're antisocial. They think you're a conspiracy theorist. So I see this aggression on both sides is on a high level. And this is not a good thing. I mean, this has completely polarized the country again. I mean, we have lots of these polarizations. And there was another thing when I calmed down and I said, okay, I should not have done this to talk to this guy like that. I realized that I was becoming so aggressive because I could not see his face, you see? Because he was just an NPC for me at that point, you know? Yes. He was an anonymous NPC, no face, just the stupid eyes looking behind his fucking mask. I mean, I even get angry when I'm talking about it now. But you see that my aggression got loosened because I could not see a human being anymore in front of me. Yeah? So I see what's happening inside me, and I guess it's happening inside of lots of people right now. I mean, I have also had this on Twitter, like I would, you know, really calmly question a few things, like, for example, this thing, the question, why has the flu disappeared? You probably have heard of that. The flu is not there anymore in statistics.
Yes. Yes. So that's a new thing. Yeah.
There are quite a few theories about it, but I would question a few things, and this guy would become immediately aggressive. He would say, wow, you have said enough. I want you to die slowly, you know, of coronavirus. And I said, well, what's going on in their heads? Oh, they're crazy.
It's interesting how, and you must have noticed this as well, how there's a... some sort of correlation between people who believe in the coronavirus and that it's a deadly plague, very dangerous to us all. There's a correlation between people who believe that and the NPCs that we talked about last year, sure, who believe in, you know, progressivism, multiculturalism, feminism, LGBT. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how much it's all one thing.
Mm. You know, years ago, I think it's my fourth time now on your show, is it?
Yes.
The first time I was with Caroline Sommerfeld, my co-author, and back then we had published this book called Living with the Left, or Living with Leftists. And it was a sort of survival guide for right-wing people, and was a very successful book back then. But we had a theory of the split in society, and we would try to go beyond the left and right scheme, and say, okay, I think it's primarily a question of do you trust the media or politicians or do you not? You know? And because the media and politicians have this left-wing progressive cause, on the left side, there will be more people trusting. But, you know, there are also leftists who are not trusting, you know, who do not believe in 9/11 or so, but they are there. Or people who don't explicitly think of themselves as being right-wing, you know, but they have lost the trust for some reason or another. And there's always a different thing. Some say it was, you know, the Ukraine crisis. It was way too much the propaganda against Putin and Russia. This made them question thing or other things. And so this is this one split, this which is very big. And like to a tectonic shift, it has progressed over the years more and more. So these two groups, one that trusts and one that does not, you know, they go apart more and more and more. It has gotten worse ever since. And all the issues that are on this side and on this side, they travel with them. So if government imposes a new story and will be heaped up on the old stories, I mean, this is an accumulative effect, yes. You see. So we have a huge overlap between those people that were NPCs.
It's basically people who believe what the government says and what the mainstream media says. It's what the authorities tell you. You've got people who believe that and people who are a bit more skeptical, independent, and then people like us who I think probably tend to assume that what the government tells you is a lie. And often we get proven correct.
I mean, there's an interesting phenomenon. Like in Germany, there had been a few really huge demonstrations, in Berlin especially, of people that call themselves the Querdenker. How can you translate this? Like, they came from all sorts of backgrounds. This was interesting. So many of them were actually more like hippie, green voter kind of people, who got alarmed by this corona crisis thing. So they switched to the side of those that are not trusting, you know, but they did not switch all of their beliefs. So what's happening is really strange. There was this mix of people, demonstrators, the protesters in Berlin, and they said, oh, there are Nazis in it and right-wingers, and there were a few right-wingers in there. But mostly it was a very interesting new phenomenon because there were people from parts of society that used to be on the believing, trusting camp, and they moved to the other camp. And this is certainly quite dangerous for the German government. So what they are doing now, and this is insane, I'll tell you something really insane. They cleared 1 billion of euros, 1,000 million euros, for a fight against the right, they call it. You know, this 1,000 million euros are supposed to go to projects that fight right wing extremism and all that. And it's insane. I mean, they already get so much money. The state is creating a whole industry of Antifa, you know, to combat a right-wing group, which is already basically has no power at all. You know, I mean, we are with our backs to the wall. That's it. You know, we are already deplatformed and so. And now, what's happening here? The thing is that first they need the bogeyman. This is very important. So, and the second thing is that they realize that these people who protest the corona politics, they are a new potential they need to erase. You see? So Aneta Kahane, you know her, is the...
Yes, our favorite redhead.
Yes, my favorite redhead commie. And she already said something like, "Oh, there are these people who believe in conspiracy theories like Great Reset or so, or Bill Gates, blah, blah." She said, "All conspiracy theories are at the core anti-Semitic." Ah, so she said it. There you go. But I think what she's saying here is that, hey, I have to take care of this. They're all anti-Semites. They're all Nazis, in fact, you know, even if they are from left-wing groups and so. And so they're expanding the definition what right-wing extremism is. No? By now, if you oppose the government politics, you are already in the right-wing corner, even if you don't see yourself like this at all. I mean, I have been to a few of these protests in Vienna. I mean, I can tell you my impression if you like.
Well, just let me say something first. I first noticed this at the end of 2018 when the people, like Hope Not Hate, organizations like that, targeted the Yellow Vests and went after them, even though the Yellow Vests had nothing to do with immigration, Islam, anything like that. Mm-hmm. The Antifa organizations, the Marxist organizations, progressive globalist organizations targeted it because they saw, okay, it's not us, it's not our side, it's not the progressive globalists and all that, therefore it's an enemy. And so they end up
This is a very good remark. Yellow West is very similar, you know. I mean, it's a protest that grew because of dissatisfaction of large parts of society. I mean, these were these white working class people in France, you know, who were not in the big cities. And they suffered from, I think, because the prices for gasoline went up. And so, and this is how the whole thing started. And you see immediately the radical left playing the watchdog of the establishment. It always does, you know, wherever it comes from. I mean, this is a left, Yellow West was a typical left-wing cause of the old days, you know, of the when left-wingers cared about working class and all that. Huh? Typical, but they immediately sided. I mean, later on, there was some confusion, you know, it was kind of overtaken by left-wingers as well, this extremist, the Yellow West thing. But one can say as a rule that whenever there's opposition against government decision, you will have Antifa and left-wingers as watchdogs coming for you. And this is,
yes.
Yeah.
And also against the whenever there's something opposing the not just the government, but corporations. Mm-hmm. Because that seems to be one and the same thing mm-hmm. at this point. So
governments are doing the will of corporations by now. I mean, and there's this thing, this Orwellian switching of words, the meaning of words, like people talk about the establishment, the ruling class. They talk about democracy all the time. Every time a protest emerges, you know, if it's a Yellow West, if it's against immigration, populism, or if it's corona measures, they say these are anti-democrats. They are not. They are fascists or whatever. And we are the democrats. We, the establishment, are the democrats. But in fact, the only democracy, so to speak, that is accepted is if you agree to decisions of the government which is following the decisions of globalist internationalist groups, you know, like, I don't know, UNO and World Economic Forum and whatever. So this is the weird thing. The line is set, that the decisions are set, and you are just, you only have, the only thing you can do is agree or not. And if you don't agree, well, okay, then you have problems, you know, then you will suffer social exclusion and all this thing and so, yeah. So this is the fact, the weird thing. Democracy consists in agreeing to what the powerful people set as their aims.
And this I think
it's so blatant in your face by now, you know, it's like a punch in your face by now.
I've made this point before on Millennial this year, that I really feel we're at the cyberpunk future that was predicted, where corporations are more powerful, or they are either the governments or they are more powerful than the governments. So everyone is now just a slave of, like, an alien, the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, or in Blade Runner, the Tyrell Corporation. It's different corporations that control whole places and whole areas of life. And, you know, it's a cliche, but I think it has finally come true. I think we're basically there now.
I mean, you can see it with the vaccines. At this point, I mean, if I talk only about the Austrian government is doing the will of these pharma corporations. I mean, they have already bought millions of those doses. Yeah, it's all set what they want to do. Yeah? And I mean, these corporations, they earn shitloads of money by this, and it's all done by the government. And the government is doing the job of imposing this on the people.
And also removing the people's right to complain if anything goes wrong. Yeah. I mean, with the vaccine, this is something that I think is incredible. Absolutely.
Yeah. No reliability. They have no legal reliability for whatever shit is going to happen. Huh?
Yeah. And it will be interesting to see if anything does happen with this vaccine. I wonder, yeah. I know that there have been some bad reactions already from some people, but nothing terribly serious. But I do wonder about the long term.
Okay. To go back to the situation in Austria concerning these vaccines, huh? The story right now pushed by the media is this. It says the only way to get back to a normal life is if at least 60% of the population gets a vaccine. This is the number they have been dealing with. I mean, this is an awful lot of people.
That's interesting. It's interesting how different things are from one country to another, because yeah. I've never heard 60%.
This is the number. Yeah. This is the number they use. Sometimes they say 70% or so. Yeah? Yeah. And this is what I read today in the paper. This is what our so-called health minister says. Some Green Party freak bastard. Sorry, but they say 60%, and they also say otherwise it won't work. They say if we don't get so many people vaccine, we will still have the virus, and can never go back to normal. And this is what people believe them. So I open up the Kronenzeitung, which I mentioned, and they have a reader's letter page. And this is quite good to see what people are thinking, or at least what the media is choosing from the mail they get. And there are occasional critical voices, so you have a sort of appearance of there's still discussion going on. But I see the majority of these letters, they say, I cannot understand these people who will not get tested or who don't want to get vaccine. Don't they want to get out? Why are they so antisocial? Don't they want to end all this? So the people are yearning for this thing to end. And the government tells them, okay, only thing is take the vaccine. Yeah. So, and this would mean a lot of people. And today when I read this, I got this, I have to confess, another weakness, you know, apart from wanting to punch people's noses. It's like, I got this blue pill longing all of a sudden. I thought, okay, maybe it's okay what they say. Maybe we take the pill or the vaccine, and there will be no bad reactions, mostly, and it will even work. The virus will disappear. And next summer, this is what Kurz promises us, next summer things could be normal again, and maybe I will get my civil rights back again, even if I'm not vaccinated, even if all the others get vaccinated, me not. And this is what I thought for a moment. You see, I got tempted by this thought, and the thing is, it could happen like this. Maybe all our worries are for nothing. Maybe people get vaccinated, okay. Maybe the virus would disappear anyway, you know, like the flu. Then you would have maybe a slight rising up again next winter. I have no idea. Maybe it would be the flu again, you know. Maybe they would decide the symptoms mean it's the flu again. I don't know, you know. So I had this strange feeling of I really got ashamed. I want to go back to the herd. I want to believe everything's okay. You can trust the government, you can trust the farmer corporations, you can trust all these doctors that are taking this, you know, what they're doing now is just these show vaccinations, like they get vaccinated live. Look here, me too, you too. You see? I mean, but even if it would work, okay, I give you one more idea. Even if it would work out fine, I mean, people get vaccinated and it doesn't harm. Maybe it helps, but I still think it would be a crime. And you know why? Because I just think in my ethical worldview, it's immoral to do such a thing, to push this thing on millions of people just by scaring them. And if you watch the videos by this Dr. Bhakti I mentioned, you know, he is warning against it for several reasons. But one point he has is that there is no need to have a vaccine for a disease that has 99% survival rate.
That's the number one thing. Yeah. I've not heard anyone argue against that.
Yeah.
As far as I can see, that's all you need to know to see that the vaccine is not necessary.
Yeah. And he also says, I mean, but this is medical stuff, I really can tell you about. He also says it doesn't work anyway the way they want it to work, because this is a disease that is now taken through the air. It affects the lungs. If you have vaccinations done through the blood, it does work, you know, but that way it doesn't work. I mean, you can have a vaccination against the flu, but it doesn't kill off the flu forever. It can't even stop you from getting infected. It can only help that you maybe have a better a course of the disease, you know, that it doesn't get too worse. But this is also one thing I read, and nobody denies it, that the vaccination doesn't stop you from getting infected. The vaccination doesn't stop you from infecting others. It just might, you know, make it happen that it doesn't kill you. You see?
Yeah, I don't know what the in case that gets used. I don't know what they're promising for the vaccine, but I think you might be right that they're not saying this will protect you from being a carrier. I'm not sure.
The information is very confusing. But the information right now is clear. This one message: if you want this to end, this lockdown terrorism, like the government is not the biggest terrorist, you have to take the vaccine. Otherwise, it will not ever end, you know? And I don't know, virologists would say it's impossible. Once the virus is there, it doesn't go away. It mutates all the time. Coronavirus have been around for thousands, hundreds, thousands of years, you know? So, and I mean, our immune systems react to this. Our immune systems are not stupid. I mean, we have these cells in our body that are there for this. But, you know, I don't want to talk medicine things, but the thing is, the narrative is there. The narrative, do this and then you get out. You know? And this is weird and freaky. And I realized that lots of people really seem to believe it. Yeah? And this is what makes me angry. I mean, even if it's for their own good, even if, let's suppose it's true, it's for their own good, you know, something would be wrong for me ethically or morally, you know, to do this, because sorry to have this monologue all the time, but the thing is, I'll tell you why it will not be the end of it. I think it will not be the end of it, because once those powers that be realize, hey, the thing works, we can do it, we have done something that never has been done in history, to make millions of people, whole nations, take a vaccine. It has not happened before, and not even when it is a disease that is completely, totally deadly. No? They will get the taste of it, you see, of this power. I mean, maybe they do it in the first place.
Well, all the systems are now in place. The infrastructure to persuade people to take the vaccine, to create the vaccine, to devise it, to multiply it, to distribute it, but especially to persuade people to take it. All of that infrastructure has now been created. So it's not...
Absolutely.
I don't think it will just be thrown away.
This is the test run. It's a social, a large-scale social experiment. And once it has been accomplished, you can go up the next level, and the next level, and the next level. I mean, if you look up, these people have been thinking about these kind of things for years. They're planning years ahead. And they may plan decades ahead. I mean, it sounds insane, but I mean, it's not
really
a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy theory because it's in the open. You can look it up. It's not hidden. It's not a hidden conspiracy. It's all in the open. And you can say that, you know, once they succeed in doing this, and it may not cause really harm, but they succeeded in pulling off this show, and
it's a testament to how powerful the mainstream media still is. Yeah. And we all hoped that it was on its last legs, and we're using terms like the legacy media, and now we've got the alternative media. We're going to replace them, and that was exciting. But I think we've learned this year that we've learned before this, but really, especially this year, no, absolutely not. Maybe they are very, very powerful.
You know, like hopefully we're in part two of the old Star Wars counting, like The Empire Strikes Back, you know. That part, the Empire would win, but in the third part, the Ewoks would come.
The Ewoks will save us
to save us. Yeah, this lovely, cuddly little brown, you know, furry.
Wonderful.
So I don't know. I mean, I've been talking to people. Many people hope that it will not work out. You know, that hybrids will. I mean, here's one thing I noticed, that the government puts out these announcements, what it is going to do. You know, for example, one thing, they have imposed now a new lockdown starting after Christmas, and it will end of January. But a week ahead, they said you can get test yourself free, not vaccine, but tests. You know, you get one of those tests, and then you are already free, and the rest has to stay in the lockdown curfew until the thing is over. So they were kind of blackmailing people to do that, you see. And I could realize that even the brainwashed people didn't like this idea. I mean, because it was so obviously a blackmail, you know. I could read the letters to the editor in the papers and so. And now when the rules were officially announced for this lockdown, this test yourself free thing was not in there anymore. So I see they always do it. They announce it, hey, and then they see what's happening, how people are reacting, right? I mean, right now something interesting is happening, that the owners of restaurants and so, they say they will not play the police or the sheriff and ask people if they are vaccinated or tested to allow them into their restaurants. So many said it, you know. They feel disgusted by the idea. This gives me hope, you know, that there is not everybody brainwashed and so. So they might overdo it. And here's one other maybe white pill, that they would announce these mass testings. They would say, everybody go to the mass testings. They even tried to bribe people. And, yeah, you get 50 euros if you get yourself this test. Huh? So why? Because they need to get their numbers up. They say, well, the numbers have risen. But people would not take it, you know. They would not go to these mass tests, and they would not take the money. So it was quite a flop.
It is possible that people are willing to go along with masks and even the lockdown, but an enforced vaccination or creating second-class citizens out of people who refuse to take the vaccine, it's possible that will be too much for the public. I don't know.
I think so. People think it's a good idea. I also read it in the papers, and also people say, hey, this is a great idea if you limit their, you know, like going to restaurants or taking a flight or so. Some people really think this is great to incite people to take this fucking vaccines. So, wow. I mean, here's another thing that could happen, you know. I mean, I don't know, of course, but some people believe that this whole thing is designed to create a huge economic crash. These are the eggs that have to be smashed to create the omelette, you know.
Yeah, this is the next thing, isn't it, altogether? The Great Reset.
Yeah.
And it's another, because, yeah, if you want to go into that, that's fine.
I'm not an expert on this. I mean, you had a few people on it who probably know more about it than I do. I mean, by now, it's just speculations. How are they going to achieve this Great Reset, you know? I mean, sometimes when my computer gets stuck, I just let him crash and then, you know, boot it up again. So, I mean, there have been warnings already in spring, that some people said economic crash was on its way anyway, you know, and now some people are trying to push for it. Because, I mean, like in the crashes of 2008 and so, there will be people making money from it, profit from it, but here it seems something more at stake, because this whole Great Reset thing really seems to be about a whole recreation of society out of chaos. I mean, I'm speculating here now, but it has happened before. You create a huge chaos, and then people scream and beg for the government to save them. They say, please, save us, you know. So, I mean, it could be that the intent is even more malicious than we might think at this point.
Exactly. It could be that they've got the solution, and they needed to create the problem.
Yeah,
so absolutely. That could be it. I think more likely they always had this solution, and they were just waiting for a problem to come along that could be used as the justification. I think they've wanted to do the Great Reset for a long time. And it's alarming that none of us knew about this. Like in the general public, no one knew about the term the Great Reset. It was there, it was in public, but no one knew about it until now. And suddenly it's everywhere. And you've got all of these politicians and corporate leaders using that term. We need a great...
There was another term, this build back better. It appeared all of a sudden everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering whether people would be saying that on Millennial, that are we going to build back better? But no one said it until now. But yeah, that was another one.
I'm beginning to wonder if, I don't know what Kurz's intentions are. I mean, I guess it is for any government right now impossible to not accept this sort of policy. I mean, they can't, because they will have huge international pressure. I mean, Sweden tried it differently, but they received a lot of pressure as well, and you get conflicting news about how it turned out. You have White Russia, you see what happened. All of a sudden, a color revolution popped up, you know. I don't think it's a... I guess it's not a nice government over there, but they did not impose this... These coronavirus policies. So they were one of the few who did not. Yeah? So I guess they can't go out of this. Yeah? They just have this pressure, and probably they are believing something has to be done. I think any government at this point would have actually no other choice than to do this. And this is also scary, because you see how big this power is. And I don't know how it would work in detail, but you don't have to tell governments, hey, we have this plan, you have to do this and this and this. You just have to exert power. You just have pressure. It's like with normal people. Normal people are afraid of social exclusion. And Kurz and the governments are afraid of social exclusion out of international community, you see. I mean, they would be vilified. They would have no standing. And, of course, there's the media. The media is really like a beast with an instinct. You don't have to tell the media what to do. They just do it out of instinct. You know? They see a coronavirus mutation, and they all go with these headlines because it's just their natural reaction to this.
They go with what?
Like a dog. Yeah. A dog does not choose to salivate when he sees some food. And the media is the same. And people in the media, they're like beasts.
There is that, but I also think that they find out what's the line on this issue. What are we supposed to say? I think it's quite easily transmitted, and then they just do it. They just go for it. There's very little. What's the word? There's a word for this, but there's very little disagreement in the mainstream media about coronavirus, or indeed about any other issue of the age, like LGBT, gay marriage, multiculturalism, mass immigration, all of these things. The mainstream media is almost unanimous that all of these are great things. Well, except for COVID. It's a dreadful thing, but the vaccine's wonderful. It's just taken for granted.
It has gotten worse over the years. Now there's a complete una voce, all the same. The same as when our media reports about Trump. It's always orange man bad. There's nothing ever he could done well. And now Biden, is everything he does is good, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's the savior. America is back. I mean, there's so if I was in the media, there were so many nasty stories I could do about Biden. There are so many of them, you know. And every little Trump said pussy 10 years ago. No, horrible, horrible. And you see Biden, these videos where he's like touching little girls and so on.
You could make
stories out of this, but they don't do it. You see, it's all the story.
The evidence is right there. People have seen the footage of him doing this. I mean, if Trump had done that, they went on and on about his small hands. Yeah. You know, remember that? Just utterly petty. They would be going endlessly on about he touches children. For God's sake, it's right there. He's doing it in front of you. how obvious can it be? But no, they don't. This bias, I mean, honestly, I remember in 2016 realizing the bias in the media. I always knew that they were biased, but the bias got so obvious with Brexit and with Trump versus Hillary. But it's just been unbelievable. This year has been incredible. And you've seen it now with the social media corporations as well. I mean, back then it was the big channels, the BBC, CNN, and all that. Now it's them, but it's also, and they're simply just ignoring things. Like they completely ignored the Hunter Biden mm-hmm. stuff, for example. But also it's Twitter and Facebook and YouTube who are now completely on board with that. I mean, the mm-hmm. censorship on Twitter with the 2020 election has been absolutely incredible. It's completely shameless and right out in the open because they just don't care. They are completely unafraid of being seen for what they are. They don't care. But that's another matter. I wanted to, just before we move on, I said earlier that no one knew about the Great Reset. It was out in the open, it was there, but no one knew about it. Mm. And someone has commented, some of us did know about it, to be fair. Klaus Schwab was trying to push this very same bullshit in 2009 with the swine flu crap. Mm-hmm. And that was what you mentioned earlier. And I don't remember Klaus Schwab or the World Economic Forum talking about this stuff in 2009, but I have heard this, that they were going on about, they saw that as an opportunity, that they were hoping that was an opportunity to launch this stuff then, but it didn't work. So then he wrote some more books about it. I think he wrote one in 2016 about the Great Reset, and now this has happened, and they've tried it again, and this time it's worked. And I think the big difference between 2020 and 2009 is that the media has become completely homogenous ideologically since then. I think in 2009 there was still disagreement in the mainstream media about certain things. I don't think the level of control had been achieved yet, which they now have, to the point where they can, I mean, it's virtually unanimous about every issue.
Yes, and
I think that's why they're able to push this stuff so efficiently and so effectively. And so also, but the same guy made another point, it's tied in with the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. They have been openly talking about their Bretton Woods 2.0 goals on live streams on their YouTube channel. Less than 100 people were watching it when I saw the IMF chief say this. And that's interesting because I've seen, you get these very, very powerful institutions like the IMF and so on that have a YouTube channel with hardly any subscribers. Mm-hmm. And so they're massively powerful, very influential over our everyday lives. But the public aren't watching this. I mean, I admit I'm as guilty as anyone here. They talk about this stuff, but nobody watches it because nobody wants to watch dry, boring economic live streams. I mean, it sounds absolutely awful. But that means it's a mistake because they're announcing in advance what they're planning to do or what they want to do. It's quite remarkable that you're seeing this stuff, like what would be called conspiracy theories, where you're seeing the conspiracies playing out in public. And it's not... Yes. It's not some like behind closed doors in a smoky room. It's on YouTube live streams. It's just that nobody's watching them, even though these are such powerful, prominent institutions.
Yeah, they have to. They can always say we are completely transparent. We said it all the time. Nobody watched it. Nobody was interesting. I mean, they are revealing now, so to speak, the power level now because, I mean. This didn't happen overnight. They always had this sort of power. They just decided to tolerate it for a while longer. Now they don't. And as you said, big tech, YouTube, Facebook, they have become openly partitions. Openly.
Partisan.
They just don't care. They're political parties now. They're taking sides explicitly. In the Biden-Trump thing, they take sides explicitly, very clearly. They don't give a fuck anymore because nobody's there to control them. Nobody's there to stop them. They just can do it. They can say, all right, okay, here's my devil's horn and my hooves. So you just saw it for 2 seconds. Now I continue. And here's the thing I would like to mention. I talk about the devil's horns also. I wanted to tell you a bit of what I experienced in these protests, against
COVID. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Well, there have been a few in Vienna every Saturday, and it's not as large as it was in Germany. In Germany, there were really thousands of people in Berlin and other cities. In Austria, you had a few hundred in Vienna, at least, and I have attended a few of those. it was a strange experience, you know, because some of these people, they're making a mistake a bit like these QAnon guys. They have dissociated from mainstream media, and they're jumping into some other sort of bullshit. Their ways of thinking have not changed. They're just the same, and they start to adopt really, really, really horrible stuff, you know. So I experienced a strange mix. I mean, on this protest, there were all sorts of people. This was interesting. I mean, all sorts of ages, men and women as well. And you could also see all sorts of, there were people that looked clever, people that looked dumb, people that looked more working class, people that looked more, all kinds of people were there. So it's really interesting. And sometimes at these, you had speeches, some were really brilliant, some were up for facts. And then all of a sudden, you get some women to women, they're painters, and they say, "Who, we have two paintings made, and we're gonna play, how you say, they pull papers out of a hat and one wins."
Yes, drawing lots.
Yeah, so she has a painting, she had made a painting of Trump as the Mighty Hulk, you know, like, "Hur!" And so, and the other one had made a painting which had a huge Q on a black background, like "Trust the Plan." This was end of November when I saw it. Yeah?
And so you're talking about boomer sort of MAGA-tard, Q-tards.
Yeah, something like this. And then a woman was entering the stage, and she said, "Oh yes, I'm a filmmaker. You can see my films on YouTube." And she has this soft speaking voice, and then she comes off with some new agey, like love and light esoterics, and we must be afraid of the powers of darkness. And it's really weird, because at one point these people say, "Well, we are thinking for ourselves, we don't believe what the media says, we go for facts," and so on. Sometimes you had speeches where people would go with really scientific facts, and then you have this mix when people come in and they offer you some sort of salvation, some sort of dream world. And this is weird, because they say, "Well, the media is creating a dream world. The media is creating a fantasy illusion," but they don't realize they themselves are offering another kind of fantasy illusion. And I must say, this was kind of embarrassing. I had this Fremdscham, you know this word, the German word, Fremdscham.
I don't know it. I don't know that word.
This is like if you feel ashamed for somebody else. I mean, not because what you are doing, but what he's doing, you feel ashamed. And so so it was a very weird, strange kind of show, yeah. And it would be, I see these people are easy prey for mainstream press to make fun of. Very easy.
Yes, and this is a problem.
This is really sad, because often you find people who are already social outcasts. Yeah? I mean, they have nothing to lose, and so, and some are very naive. Some say, "Oh, we have to talk to the president. He has to realize what's going on. Doesn't he read the Constitution? We have to save the Constitution," all this. And so they're very naive. And the last time I was there, I mean, this was after the new restrictions were announced. For example, this vaccine passport and so. And a few people were there. It was a very rainy, cold day. And so first was the speech was quite good, and then the moderator said, "Okay, now here comes, you know, another guy, let's call him Hans, and he has another theory of who's behind the Great Reset, apart from Klaus Schwab or George Soros or whatever you might think of." And then he goes on, and this guy actually does a quote from the Apocalypse, the Book of Revelations in the Bible. And there's a famous part, which we probably have heard of, when it says everybody was assigned with the mark of the beast.
Yes, on their hand.
Or sell. Yeah.
Yes.
You were.
Yes.
This is. I mean, I have heard this story 30 years ago already, that you will be chipped and barcoded, and then. So the scary thing is that these sort of ideas are actually there. You know? These ideas of chipping people, of giving you a digital identity and all that. So it could happen. Yeah. But what I'm aiming at is this, okay, so he was opening up the Book of Revelations, and now the story you are in is a quite different story. It's a biblical story. It's a story that has been read in the Western world for 2,000 years. The story of the Antichrist, of the end of the world, and so.
I've had conversations with people who really believe this, that we're looking at the. And indeed, I asked a particular guy on to Millennial this year who I thought would bring that theory in, but he declined. But it is, I'm not well read on Christian theology or eschatology, but it is interesting. But I think you're right that we do have to be careful about taking it, about promoting it too much, because it does sound to normies, it will make us seem crazy.
Absolutely, it make them look like cooks. You know, it was very, very bad optics. You know, I mean, it was presented like this. So here's the theory. Maybe some of you agree, some of you not. We are all open minded here. We're not like the mainstream media. And then the guy does the preaching thing. It was like preaching. And I thought, oh my God, I mean, this is really bad optics for the media. I mean, they have such an easy game to say, wow, these people are crazy to talk about Antichrist, ha ha ha. And so, but now here's the thing that, well, I don't think this is too implausible, in fact. I mean,
yeah, that's why I wanted to have a mole.
but let me explain you why. I mean, so not in a direct sense that I would take literally the whole Bible. I mean, my relation to Christian belief is a bit complex, and for me it's a very personal thing, but I did have the impression of something diabolic going on. It felt like if I look for words to describe what's going on, I can say it's insane, but I would even go a step further and say this is demonic. This is diabolic. There's something diabolic in it, and
you see
that the devil would be called the father of the lie. So the lie is essential to diabolism, and there was a German sociologist, Arnold Gehlen was his name. He's very much revered among conservative right-wing people because he had a theory of society that was based on the power of institutions, which said, the left thinks if you remove institutions, everybody will be free and emancipated. And Galen, he had a conservative theory of society that would just do the opposite and say, in order for society to function, you need institutions, you need guidelines, you need to have traditions and all. So he was a very, very dry scientist. And there's one book he wrote in the 1960s, and he was attacking the moralism of the left. It was called Moral and Hypermoral. Yeah. And this is a great
book. That's interesting. Well, yeah. It's very perceptive.
Extremely. Yeah. Because if you read this book today, you need not change a single line. Yeah. And it was already there in the 60s. And in the end of the book, all of a sudden, he changes his tone. You know, this is a complete dry guy. And then he says, all right, here's the thing that the Antichrist always wears a mask, we wear masks, the mask of the Savior. So the Antichrist does not come and say, I will destroy anything, but he says, no, I will bring peace, I will make everything good, I will create a universal brotherhood of human beings. And he was pointing to a painting, you should look it up, it's in Italy, in a cathedral in Orvieto. And it shows the Last Judgment, and there's a figure of Christ. Apparently, you look at it and you see, there's something scary about this Christ, the look on his face and so on. And then you see that there's a devil behind him, a horned devil, and he's whispering in his ear. And this figure is supposed to be the Antichrist. So he's mimicking Christ. He's posing as Christ, Like some insect that is posing as a butterfly, so it's like a spider posing as a butterfly, something nice. Yeah? So, so Galen would say that it is a satanic evil thing to create. He said, "Das Reich der Lüge, the empire of lies, and force other people to live in it." This is how this book ends. This is in conservative literature. In Germany, you find this quoted very often. And it was very unusual that a man like Galen, as I told you, he had nothing to do with religion and so whatsoever, but he would think that he could not express it any other way. There was an empire of lies erected, a world of lies. You live in a complete world of lies, and you are being forced to live in it. And I have felt this so strongly this year. I mean, it was not only Corona, it was also Black Lives Matter, it was also the Trump election. I mean, I have felt it before, but that's strong. It's like, it's really there now, you know? It's like,
oh, absolutely. With the BLM thing especially, all three of these things, but with BLM, for just to use that as the example, that was based on a lie.
It has been around for a while. It started in 2012 with the trauma on Arkansas. It was a complete lie as well.
And it started, but especially this year with the George Floyd
this year,
thing.
That was
a lie. I mean, it was. We know. We've seen the footage now. It's out there. Everyone now knows or can see it, he wasn't killed by police. I mean, and yes, maybe we should wait until the courts decides, but you know, based on the evidence, I would say he was not killed by police. It was a fentanyl overdose. But all of this destruction that's followed that happened because of this assumption that, oh yeah, he was killed. You know, this destruction has been completely outrageous. I mean, taking down statues, defacing statues beyond repair, dismantling our culture. This is stuff that, satanic to me.
It was supported by every other fucking big corporation on this planet. I mean, I remember somebody made a list on a webpage. There were hundreds of big companies. Everyone, you name it, was supporting it. Everyone was adopting the BLM hashtag. It was really incited from above. I can only say it's artificially created by the media and by people from above who push it. I can only say this because, I mean, it just happens like that. You have to tell the story. It was weird how it happened. So, and now, okay, this is one example, but here's the thing. I mean, I find also no other words for saying it's satanic, and sometimes like today, when I read the paper and I get this blue pill longing, and I think, maybe I'm crazy, maybe they are all right, maybe I'm really that crazy. I mean, it's normal, you should question yourself from time to time. I think this is a good thing to do, and then check, okay, but when I check and I see, okay, but anyway, this vaccination thing is not okay. There's something wrong about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know what the consequence of this is. I mean, I'm a person who has a metaphysical sense. Some people don't have it. You know, I have it very strongly, you know. So I'm receptive for this kind of thing, you know. I'm receptive for the belief of higher worlds, of transcendental things, even of entities, you know. I'm all open for this, you know. I also believe that prayers do work, so to speak. I would not use this word, but I believe in this thing. Of course, I'm receptive to this, you know. I would be cautious, you know, to make any prophecies, you know, or to play the prophet. I hate this, you know. I would never do that. But, I mean, we could assume, and I don't know if this helps us, you know. I mean, I've noticed one thing about the right-wingers in Germany. This is probably something I should mention as well. Whether it be the Deterians or others, we have a strong feeling of defeat. You know, like 2016 or 17 feels so far away. You remember this was the time when everybody felt a change would come.
Yeah, that's when you and I first met. Different age.
It seems like ages ago now, and the empire struck back hard. And I mean, just YouTube, you know, there was massacres on YouTube. There were thousands of channels, you know, deleted. So this is what we believed in 2006. We said, oh, fuck the mainstream media. We always have the internet. But who owns the internet? I mean, it seems like there's a way to control it, right? And also, I mean, the trust in political parties. I mean, in Austria, we had finally the Freedom Party elected into the government, but they were all idiots. I mean, they were suffering very unfair pressure. But it was also they themselves to blame because they were incompetent idiots. You know, and the same in Germany, Alternative für Deutschland, Alternative for Germany. You know, the party is just deconstructing. I mean, now they have a fight between well, I simplified the based ones and the cocked ones, you know, and the cocked ones are winning at the moment. And so the state is really, you know, the state is spending, I told you, millions of money to suppress any right-wing opposition. And they're also using the Verfassungsschutz. This is the I never find the English word for that. You know, it's the intelligence service for the interior, which is observing political extremists. And it's, of course, used as a weapon because everybody gets labeled an extremist who is opposing the government. This is the way it works, you know. And so they have now my my publishing house, you know, my employer, so to speak, is Kubitschek and Secession, and they are now under observation of Verfassungsschutz, you know, which means a taint, you know. It says, who? These are fishy, these are extremists, these... And even the president of Verfassungsschutz would announce in spring, we are super spreaders of hate, he called us. You know, he was using the virus language. And here's another thing I'd like to point out, that, I mean, I have been known this virus language for a long time, because right-wing thought is treated as a virus, or right-wing people are being treated as infectious people. And there's even a sort of contact tracing, you know, if you have a contact with somebody who said something naughty, or you don't even want to get close to people who say something naughty because you could start thinking like them and so. And this has been going on for years, that people who have right-wing thoughts are being treated as infectious, as carriers of disease, of mental viruses. They need to be isolated. They need to be quarantined. You need to have a vaccine with left-wing ideology, and so the analogies are endless. You know, so, and now it's shifting that they even say that, you know, there's another virus going on now. It's the virus of coronavirus deniers and of conspiracy theorists, and these are to blame that the lockdowns will never end, and so. And, you know, this is a really, really dangerous thing when people are getting treated as if they were a disease that has to be eliminated.
And oh yeah, I mean, you and I are used to that, but it is scary when you realize the reality of it. They do see you as something infectious that has to be contained, and hopefully we can come up with a vaccine for, you know, right wing hate mongery.
No, this money that government is spent, German government spending, is going for mental vaccines, which means like more left-wing propaganda, which is, you know, you get fist fucked with, sorry my language, and every other channel you see, so you cannot escape it from it anymore. And yeah, well, I mean, I've been known in that people were being, you could scare people of conservative newspapers or of books, you know. So I mean, so these are dangerous things. You just read them or look at some web pages you're not supposed to look at, and it could infect you and so on. This is why it must be censored and quarantined. This is a perfect analogy here, I think.
Yes, I agree. I think we've had a very interesting discussion here, and there is more that could be said, especially on that last bit about the Antichrist. But I mean, it's not something I know much about, and I'm not going to say this is the truth or whatever. I just think it's an interesting, if nothing else, it's an interesting thing to consider. It's an interesting thought experiment, if nothing else. Okay, so let's move on to the questions. So, because people have been posting questions and comments throughout the whole thing. Someone used the term medical grifting. I think that was to do with when you were talking about the
pharma industry as well.
Yeah. And that was a donated one diamond, which is a D-Life thing, which I'm still getting used to. Somebody else said, I'm really digging the German accent. Now, they meant that as a compliment, but I think you probably want to explain that your accent is not really German, is it?
Well, there are sorts of German accents, like you have Scottish accents or American accents or Southern, Northern. So I have a very Austrian accent, but it's also, of course, a type of German, a sort of German.
So we have ways to make you talk, you allied pig.
I was thinking of asking you to say, we have ways of making you take the vaccine.
like Dr. Strangelove from Stanley Kubrick. We have ways of making you take the vaccine, right? So
that's very convincing. All right. And someone else said, his accent is awesome. Something there is going on. They quoted. And someone says, I wish I could speak German as well as Martin speaks English. There we go. And someone else said, oh, yeah, ask Martin who that author was he was talking about. I think this is Galen. And what was the book called?
I don't know if it has been translated. It's Arnold Galen, and the book is called Moral and Hypermoral. From Moral 1969, yeah.
Right, okay. I'll try to remember that and link it in the description.
I send you the name on Telegram. So you
Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, and someone else says, Martin, thank you. Someone else says, Martin is hot, almost as hot as you, Woz. Thank you very much, Anger at Celtic. She's always very enthusiastic. She is actually, yeah.
Oh, nice.
All right. So, and then what was that? Oh, yeah. Someone said, I wonder how Lichtmess would be in a fist fight. I think that was when you were talking about when you were angry at the guy wearing the mask.
I mean, it was not a very large guy, and I'm not a very large guy as well. So I think I could have taken a chance in a surprise punch, you know, because he wouldn't expect it. But otherwise, I'm not really a fist fight guy, I admit.
No, you're much more cerebral and intellectual.
Yeah, I'm cute and nice and cuddly.
All right. I wouldn't have gone that far, but yeah, cerebral. And someone else said, did this guy used to smoke a pipe? And yes, he did.
I haven't done it in a year now.
Right.
And I haven't even smoked. I like to smoke these little cigars. And so I don't, it just got lost. No dramatic thing whatsoever. I mean, I did smoke a little cigar a few days ago and I hated it. So I kind of lost the taste for it. I don't know. Maybe
that's funny. Yeah, both of us.
You have a decision on your part to give up smoking, was it?
Sorry, what did you say?
It was a conscious decision on your part.
Yes, it was a strange experience. And I told the story in the stream with Critical Conditions, Robin Riley. I told the story of how I stopped smoking. And some people were saying, but you're still vaping. And that's true. I am still vaping, although I didn't for the first 5 days. But vaping is completely different from smoking. I mean, it's simply not addictive. It's certainly not for me. I mean, I can easily go without it. I just forget to do it, literally. Yeah. So with smoking, you're thinking, I need another cigarette. I need another cigarette. Constantly. So it's totally
I never had this kind of addiction. I mean, only addiction I have is coffee, maybe. But it just faded. You know, I just lost interest. Now I have all these photos with me in the pipe and I'll start again. I mean, I just enjoyed it, but I lost the taste for it. I know coronavirus, maybe, you know. Maybe I have a mild form of coronavirus that makes me taste in smoking.
It could be. Nothing would surprise me. And someone says, do you know Camus' L'Étranger, the stranger or the outsider?
Killing an Arab was based on that.
Yes, that's what... I think that's what he was referring to. The Killing an Arab is a reference to Camus' book. Yeah,
the other, you know, the joke about Renaud Camus. There are two Camus, Albert Camus and Renaud Camus, the guy who wrote Great Replacement. You know, Yeah, but listen, and Renaud Camus, they say, is the guy who doesn't like the stranger.
Right. Yes. Indeed. Yeah.
You get the joke.
Yes, I do. I do. So somebody was asking who the author was. So here it is. They are written in the live chat. Sorry, I'm a bit distracted, but yes, it is a good, amusing. All right. Here's here's a jokey question first. How do you feel about reforming the Holy Roman Empire? Maybe not so jokey. I don't.
I'm all for it. I just don't know how to start with it. I mean, so I visit the emperor's grave at Kapuzinergruft once in a year and say, rise again, Franz Josef, rise again. But I don't know, it hasn't worked so far.
Right, okay. And then another question was, is Anna, here's a big question, and you can, we've got 10 minutes, so I don't know how long you want to spend on this. Is Austria less cucked than Germany?
All right, we have discussed it, I think, before.
Yes, I think we have.
Mm, yeah. Well, I'd say yes in many respects, but it doesn't mean we are really better off by now, you know, because being less cucked gave us this wonderful government, you know, which is, you know, has some, is much more right-wing or conservative than, for example, Germany. I mean, it would not work if people wouldn't vote for that. But now this government is just screwing us. I mean, it's a bit like Boris Johnson in UK. He's just, now it's clear he's nothing else but a globalist in disguise. He's a fake populist. Yeah? I mean, Kurz is almost the same to me. So I would say in many respects we are, and I think I told you the story, Colin, how that came to pass. To make it short, it was this thing that after World War II, we just, you know, kind of rewrote history, and we said we were also victims, you know. So at the Anschluss in 1938, you know, we were just occupied like Poland or like Czechia.
Yeah, it wasn't our fault. The Scots have done exactly the same thing with the British Empire. Mm. So the Scots say, oh, no, we were colonial. We were oppressed as well by the English. Yeah. It wasn't, the Empire had nothing to do with us. But actually, the Scots were quite instrumental in the Empire. Quite funny.
I mean, of course, there was in Austria as well, this thing was called Vergangenheitsbewältigung. This word is not used anymore much, dealing with the past, you know. This is where you try to, you know, work up the guilt of the Nazi past. So they have been doing this as well in Austria, but it did not go as deep as in Germany. And partly because of this historical myth, also because Austrians have a different character. They don't take things to this extreme, you know. Germans, they like everything they do has to be 100% extreme, you know.
Yeah, the Austrians are not as autistic, I mean, as the Germans.
The Austrians have, I mean, Hugo von Hofmannsthal was an Austrian writer. He characterized the Austrians as self-ironic until they start to dissolute. I'm translating it very badly now, but you know, this self-irony thing, this not taking things too seriously, is an Austrian trait. And here's a joke I like to make. I told to you in one of our old shows that after World War I, when the war was lost in Berlin, people said the situation is bad but not hopeless. And in Austria they said the situation is hopeless but not bad. So they just, you know.
That's a good one. There are several other questions have come in, actually. So I think this is actually going to be the longest millennial this year, at least so far. So that's quite interesting. Don't you think 2020 was a great year for the mass awakening of normies to mainstream media manipulation? The beginning of the great collapse, perhaps. Best time to plant seeds of doubt. We will succeed. Great stream.
Okay. I just don't share this optimism, but I'm not really good in optimism anyway, so don't take my word for it. I mean,
well, it's true that it is true, though, that lots of people have realized for the first time that they don't and shouldn't trust the mainstream media. I mean, yeah, okay. COVID has definitely done that.
True. There's this thing I told you about the protests in Germany where people from very different backgrounds, they're on the street against the government all of a sudden. And they would align with right-wing people. So something new was happening here. There was a sort of awakening of normies. But the problem is, and I mentioned before, that some might awake to another dream, you know, when they fall into this QAnon shit traps and all this. So they're disorientated, you know, they have absolutely no way to explain the world apart from what the media has told them. Now they suddenly have lost trust in the media, and then they take everything they can find and so. But I mean, anything has to start somewhere. It's a good start. I mean, I want more and more people to lose trust in the media. I want more conspiracy theorists, and I want more people to really, because there's reason for it, to distrust politicians.
Somebody, of course there is, very much.
Somebody wrote on Twitter, I don't know who it was, maybe it was Way of the World. He said, it's not, the scary thing is not that politicians behave like predators, but that the people behave like prey. And that's how I see it as well. And I mean, when I saw, you know, the story I told about this guy coming towards me, I saw, oh, here's this guy who's behaving like prey, and I just want to knock sense into him and say, wake up. You remember this stupid video that was viral prior to the election? There was this woman who said, Republicans, you're the one history warned us about. Wake up. You remember this? Did you see this?
Yeah, yes, I did, yeah.
Okay, I don't want to sound like this now. So, wake up, mommies, wake up.
Well, see, that's the thing. You can't afford to be too exasperated with normies, because they're just doing what they do. I mean, Way of the World is absolutely correct. It is frightening that people behave like prey. But that is what that means is that, well, this is human nature. It's human nature to be prey to those who are powerful. And that means that, well, we have to accommodate that. We have to take that as an assumption from now on.
Here's the thing. I would advise to be patient with normies. I mean, as I told you, I feel it myself often, this hate and aggression. And I feel it coming from them also as well towards me, because I do not conform. But I realize, why are they doing this? Because they are afraid. They believe the story. They are really seriously afraid. No? And I cannot say that I'm totally unafraid as well. You know, I mean, of course, I worry that I also worry that COVID might harm part of my family, or that I don't want to get it either. You know, I mean, I'm not free from this, you know, but I tell myself consciously to, no, don't get yourself into a panic. Don't let yourself make crazy, you know. And now I see people, they are really actually afraid to believe the story. No, they're not malicious. They're not malevolent, you know. They might not even be dumb, you know. Very clever people believe this.
So,
you have to be patient and forgiving to them, you know, not like me, like wanting to punch everybody and so.
Yeah. All right. Do you think that we can win people over by focusing on the World Economic Forum? When people want to stop the Great Reset, they have to reject the dogmas of the World Economic Forum: equality, diversity, inclusion.
Well, these slogans, they are very broadly accepted by now. So if you ask a normie, wow, this does sound good. What's wrong about diversity or inclusion or taking care of the environment? So this works. And I noticed that if you point out the Economic Forum agenda, it works only on people who are already interested in going deeper, because it's not easy to understand. It's hard to communicate this to the normie. And if you direct them to the websites of World Economic Forum, it's mostly boring. What you see is boring. Only if you actually try to understand what they're actually saying, you realize,
It's funny because I had the same experience reading the Communist Manifesto. I've never read Das Kapital, but I did, because it's huge. The Communist Manifesto is only about 50 pages long, but I could hardly get through it. It was so boring. It was just so, this awful, heavy prose, that no life to it. And I've seen other communist writings where it's this dreadful way of writing. And I tend to think it's the same thing applies, where you either read it because you just want to agree with it, and that's okay, that's fine, yes. Mm-hmm. Or if you're opposed to it, you just won't read it, because it's agony. It's so boring to read. So you'll just leave it alone.
Look, it's easier for people to think a story like, wow, Bill Gates wants to inject everybody with a vaccine that causes sterilization, or to to stop overpopulation or to chip you. I mean, this is an easy story. Anybody can understand. I'm not saying this happening. I don't believe this is the way it happens. But this is easier to get than browse through this boring Klaus Schwab programs, you see?
Yeah.
So the number of people you can reach with this is very limited, you know? And also, here's another thing that I feel it for myself. I haven't written a lot about these things. I mean, we have a blog on Secession, the website I'm working for, and I have written not very much about the corona crisis by now, but the reason is that it's just too breathtaking for me. I just have to first understand what's happening here. I still cannot fathom it, you see? I feel like there's a huge mountain and it's absolutely stunning and breathtaking, and even I can't wrap my head around it. But I see, actually, there seems to be something happening. This is so large, so crazy, so weird, that most people will stop way before that, way before they get as close as I get there. They will say, no, stop, I don't get it, I don't want to get it. It's boring. I will just worry about the numbers rising.
Yeah,
you see?
Yeah. I'll just assume that the media are not lying to me, that they're telling me the truth, and the governments are on my side, and so, because the alternative is just too scary. It's too unsettling. And this is to do with something I was going to say earlier, that people like you and I might be wrong about things. We might be silly. We might be not as intelligent as we think we are, etc. But one thing we definitely do have is a willingness to rebel, a willingness to think outside of the box. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to come to peace, to some kind of peace with the fact that most people are not like that. And you know, I've said this already, but I don't know what else to say about that. I think it's something that we have to accept and work with.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know many people who have at one point, so to speak, received the red pill when they lost this trust, you know. And all of them told me it's a painful process. It's horrible. It's shocking. It scares you. All of a sudden, you feel you have no ground under your feet. You have nothing to rely to. I mean, for somebody who's already out of this for a long time, like me, it's hard to imagine this. And I was never that much.
But even you yeah. still have these temptations now and then to go back.
Sure. Sure, right.
And so do I sometimes, because I think, God, my life would be a lot fucking simpler if I hadn't gone down this road. But I think that it's a strange thing to wish for, because you're wishing that you could believe lies, basically.
I mean, I came to realize how much of our life is shaped by media. I mean, when I go back to a time when all seemed well, you know, I mean, of course, when I was a child or a teenager, I was, of course, critical, but overall, you could believe that the story the media tells you, the media is the one that creates the nation's unity. You turn off the radio in the morning, and you are connected to this outer world, and this is a story you belong to, with all these stupid politicians and all this media and all these TV stars and whatever. And this was a world you inhabited, even if you were critical about it, but this was... Overall, it was okay, I remember. Yeah, long, long time ago, 30 years ago. And then you start to doubt, but I think it also has changed, you know. I think, objectively speaking, it has changed, you know. Media is more biased than they used to be before. I mean, there was always manipulation, always partisanship and so on, but it's way, way more than it used to be.
More biased and more... nasty, more shrill, cold. Yeah. And I've had a lot of nostalgia recently for I've been trying to remember what was Edinburgh like in the late 90s. It's because it all started when I read this film summary of a film from the late 90s, and I started to think, what was it? Because I was only 16, 17 at the end of the 90s, and so it's very difficult for me to remember. I didn't have much experience of going to art exhibitions, cinemas, art house cinemas, that kind of thing. But I did have a tiny amount of experience of it. And so I can remember the left in those days, the arty types, the liberals, were much nicer then than they are now. I mean, that's just objective. And I think the media was also, as you would expect, in keeping with that. It was more reasonable. It at least pretended to be open-minded. Yeah, yeah. You know, the whole atmosphere was just calmer, more civilized. Mm-hmm. There wasn't this the insanity of today. I really do think that things are much worse now, and people are more polarized now. The atmosphere is more aggressive, more hateful now than it was when we were kids. That's just objectively true.
Mm, absolutely. Here's a funny thing that a few months ago, this old school white nationalist guy died, Tom Metzger, and somebody discovered a video clip of him with Whoopi Goldberg in the early 1990s, and he's invited to her show. She has a brief show where she was sitting on a sofa in a cozy atmosphere, and she has Tom Metzger there, and they talking completely nicely and politely with each other. You know, she's asking him friendly questions. I mean, he's giving her very tough answers, but also in a polite manner. And it's so completely surrealistic to see that, you know. So, I mean, yes. This guy was really a very, very far-right guy. And he did not make no bones about it. And he is there in the show with Whoopi Goldberg. And they're talking nicely to each other. It was amazing. So weird. You know, it was in 1992 or so. And it's unthinkable today. I mean, even people that are way more to the center than him are being treated like scum, you know?
Yeah, by Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, yeah. Whoopi Goldberg herself, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's something that I'd love to talk about more at more length, but we will have to wrap this up, so we'll have to hurry along. Okay, so there's another question. Oh, someone says, Martin is always a great guest. Cheers to both of you. Thank you very much. And someone asks a rather unconnected question, but you might want to tackle it. Isn't Southern Tyrol in Italy the best bet for Germans who want to form autonomous communities? Majority German region, and most of them are aware of ethnic identity because they're a minority in that country. Southern Tyrol.
Well, I don't think you will. I mean, you have to be 1,000 Tyrolean to feel really at home there. And I mean, well, this is a long story. My answer would be no. I mean, they have a big sense of ethnic identity because they had suffered suppressions from the Italian state for decades. I mean, now they are all fine and well, but they're still quite aware of how different they are. And if you address them as Italians when they are in Austria, they get really pissed, you know, they're really angry, they say, no, we are not Italians, we are like South Tyroleans. And so, but by now, I mean, they have all rights, they don't suffer any oppression. And I don't think you can move there and say, hey, can I join your South Tyrolean ethnic community? I'm just an American whose grandparents emigrated from, you know what I mean. I don't think it's a good idea.
Okay. And then also, oh yes, I'm enjoying the stream on DLive. Thanks, MW. Checked Martin's bio on Secession site. Good stuff. I'm wondering if he's read Houellebecq's submission and thoughts on its potentially accurate predictions for the future EU.
Well, I read it back in 2015. It was released on the same day that Charlie Hebdo massacre happened.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it's a great score. And he was on the cover. There was a cartoon of Houellebecq on the cover of Charlie Hebdo at the same day when that week. And I've been a Houellebecq fan since way before he was cool. So I did start reading him in 1999, extension of the Battle Zone. And submission is really a nasty book, because in the end it's not so much about Islam, but it's about the weakness of liberalism. You see, and you have this guy who is submitting to Islam because he's completely deracinated because of liberalism. There is no meaning in his life anymore, nothing, and now Islam comes and offers him something, and. I don't have to spoil it. I think in the end, the book says submission. In the end, he converts to Islam, and this is very, very ironic. And I think this hits the right spots here. That the whole discussion about Islam always has to see that this Islam enters a vacuum. You know, liberalism has created a vacuum. You know, it has weakened society. It has pushed society to nihilism, and Islam at least has something to offer. You know, which maybe not be very nice for Western people, but it's more than nothing. You know, and this is what the book is about. So it's a very interesting book. And what I think is also interesting that Hulbeck, after having written this book, he would move more and more into sympathies for Catholic traditionalism. And it's in this book as well. He has this guy, he tries to find a reconnection with Catholicism, but he doesn't find it. 100 years ago, Joris Karl Huysmans, the writer of Deep Down and Against the Grain, he found it. You know? He was a decadent dandy, and then he converted, and he got there safe. But 100 years later, the protagonist of Hulbeck's novel, he can't do it anymore because he feels it's dead. You know. But Hulbeck, he would say that he doesn't think it's dead in France, and he spoke very highly of this milieu of French Catholics, and I know them firsthand. I participated at the pilgrimage to Chartres in 2015 from Paris to Chartres Cathedral. So there's a huge pilgrimage from French Catholics, and I was very impressed by these people, very much so. But they are a minority in France, and so. But I mean, there's much in them which is really, really great. And Hulbeck, he was talking very nicely about them, and this is something I appreciate. I like him anyway. I mean, he's of course he's a sort of reactionary. I mean, he really looks fucked up by now. He looks like a clochard, you know, like having spent his life on drugs and sex. But he has a sensitive soul. I mean, I know he's sad about all the ugly things on this world. He suffers from it. You know, this is why he looks so unhealthy.
Like a picture of Dorian Gray. All right. Well, let's leave it at that. Are there any final things you'd like to say before we finish?
No, actually not. I know this is not very impressive now to end the conversation, but...
No, it's fine. I was going to ask you, just to end on a bright note, if you could recommend one Peel session for people, which one would it be?
Oh, well, I haven't picked out a particular one, but I loved all, as I mentioned, I loved all the X-Mal Deutschland sessions. But you have to love X-Mal Deutschland. I mean, these recordings are better than the album recordings of the great songs by X-Mal Deutschland. And they sang in German, and I loved this particular show where John Peel says, we asked them to translate the lyrics for us, but they refused. They said you wouldn't understand them anyway. They're too cryptical.
So. All right. Okay, well, this has been really fun, and it has been, by quite a long way, the longest millennial this year. So that seems interesting to me. All right, so thank you very much for appearing. I know that the audience have loved it. We've got about 1,000 people watching just now, so that's quite nice. All right. Well, Martin Lichtmes, thank you for taking part in Millennial 2020.
Thank you for inviting me. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And see you next year, hopefully, when we are still alive and not killed off by the plague or, you know, in the digital gulag because we refused the vaccine.
Yeah, indeed, or the real gulag.
Or real gulag in Alaska, they're building already, some I heard.
All right. I'll be back in about 10 minutes with Imperium Press. In the meantime, hope you've all enjoyed this. I've definitely enjoyed this one. So thank you to Lichtmes, and thank you to you for watching. I'll see you soon.
Goodbye.